This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. Israel says it is massing troops near Gaza and calling up 9,000 reservists ahead of a possible ground invasion of the Hamas-ruled territory. Egyptian mediators rushed to Israel for ceasefire efforts over deadly rocket clashes, but showed no signs of progress. The stepped-up fighting comes as communal violence in Israel erupted for a fourth night Thursday. Jewish and Arab mobs clashed despite a bolstered by the nation's leaders. The four-day burst of violence is the most intense fighting Israel has ever had with Hamas. It has also sparked the worst Jewish-Arab violence inside Israel in decades. The U.S.'s top diplomat says he's engaging with Middle East partners with urgency to help de-escalate the rising hostilities between Israel and Hamas. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Thursday he supports a U.N. Security Council meeting Sunday on the crisis after diplomats said Washington blocked a Friday session. Blinken says he is hopeful some time will give diplomacy a chance to have some effect. The U.S. State Department on Thursday urged citizens to reconsider travel to Israel due to the recent surge in violence between the Jewish state and Palestinians. The travel advisory level, which had been lowered in recent weeks due to improvement in the country's COVID-19 situation, was stepped up to level 3 out of a maximum of 4. Washington is also advising that Americans do not travel to the West Bank and Gaza. You can find more on these stories and the rest of the day at VOAnews.com. You can also follow Voice of America on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Japan's government will add 3 more areas hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic to a state of emergency, a surprise move reflecting growing concerns about the virus's spread. Japan's economy minister said on Friday after a meeting with experts, the 3 regions will join the state of emergency already in effect in areas like Tokyo and Osaka through the end of the month. Local media is reporting dozens of Japanese towns have abandoned plans to host Olympic athletes because of concern they will overburden medical resources amid the ongoing wave of coronavirus infections. 40 of more than 500 towns registered to welcome international competitors have decided not to accept athletes for training camps and cultural exchanges before the Summer Olympics, according to the Nikkei newspaper, citing a government source. The reluctance of some towns to host visiting athletes, normally a source of pride for communities outside the host city, is the latest sign of deep unease in Japan over the scheduling of the games in the middle of a pandemic. Opinion polls have found a majority of the Japanese public is opposed to the games, which are due to open on July 23rd. United States health officials advised Thursday fully vaccinated people can avoid wearing masks in most places and do not need to wear them outdoors. Updated guidance the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention hopes will allow life to begin to return to normal. The agency also says fully vaccinated people do not need to physically distance in most places. It is still recommending vaccinated people wear masks on planes and trains and at airports, transit hubs, mass transit, and in places like hospitals and doctor's offices. The federal recommendations do not override local laws or business or workplace regulations. More teenagers in the United States began receiving COVID-19 vaccines on Thursday. U.S. regulators authorized Pfizer's vaccine for use in children as young as 12 earlier in the week, the first coronavirus shot to be approved in the United States for ages 12 to 15. Thursday was the first day the shots went into the arms of the age group in some U.S. states. Vaccinating younger ages is considered an important step for getting children back into school safely. And British health officials said Friday the rollout of COVID-19 vaccines in Britain has prevented nearly 12,000 deaths and more than 30,000 hospitalizations in older people. Britain has given 2/3 of its adult population at least one shot of COVID-19 vaccines, helping Prime Minister Boris Johnson in his efforts to reopen the economy by the summer. Reporting remotely, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 14, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's Supreme Court deals a blow to President Kenyatta's constitutional amendment process.
A declaration is hereby made that the entire unconstitutional change process promoted by the Steering Committee on the Implementation of the Building Bridges to United Kenya Task Force report is unconstitutional, null, and void.
Malawi's president speaks out against the rejection of his anti-corruption director nominee. Zambia's president calls for peaceful election this August. Nigeria's president is not a coward to run away from insecurity challenges. And Sierra Leone is on the verge of abolishing the death penalty.
What basically we are trying to do is to reaffirm our commitment to the preservation of life. So if you are found guilty of an offense of such nature anymore, instead of you being sentenced to death by hanging, then we're replacing it maybe to life in prison with some other attachment.
And African Muslims mark the end of Ramadan amid COVID-19. Those stories plus Samson Omali Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Uhuru Kenyatta's Building Bridges initiative that was meant to bring Kenyans together has been ruled unconstitutional by the country's High Court. In a late-night ruling Thursday, the High Court, led by Judge Joel Ngugi, said the initiative that would see some constitutional amendment through a referendum was null and void. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, lawyer Destin Omari says President Kenyatta may not accept the court's ruling.
In the ruling, Judges Joel Ngugi, George Odunga, Jairus Ngaah, Teresia Matheka, and Chacha Mwita upheld a consolidated case by the 8 petitioners that the Constitution bears essential features that cannot be amended. Justice Ngugi said that the president cannot initiate a process to change the constitution with the reason to promote national unity.
Mr. Uhuru Muigai Kenyatta has contravened Chapter 6 of the Constitution and specifically Article 73, Sub-Article 1, Sub-Sub-Article A, Sub-Sub-Sub-Article 1 by initiating and promoting a constitutional change process contrary to the provisions of the Constitution on amendment of the Constitution.
Petitioners who moved to court argued that the Building Bridges Initiative referendum bill was not the will of the people, but based on political interests. Justice Ngugi says the initiative steering committee was unlawful and had no legal capacity to promote constitutional changes.
A declaration is hereby made that the entire unconstitutional change process promoted by the Steering Committee on the Implementation of the Building Bridges to United Kenya Task Force report is unconstitutional, null, and void.
Justice Ngugi also ruled that the BBI bill cannot be subjected to referendum before the electoral body of Kenya attains the quorum to conduct its mandate. The Building Bridges Initiative has seen many obstacles, and Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto publicly opposed the initiative, as members of parliament who criticized the initiative were also fired from the positions they held in parliament committees. Lawyer Danstan Omari says President Kenyatta illegally perfected the BBI bill to keep former prime minister engaged so he could not question his regime.
President Uhuru Kenyatta perfected the process of BBI illegitimately, unconstitutionally, knowing very well when it will come to the question before the judges will dismiss it. And therefore, he has gotten peace to govern this country without demonstrations, without war.
Omari, however, says that those supporting the BBI bill can move to Court of Appeal and nullify the High Court ruling.
The reasons the judges have given are constitutional, but we are in a regime that does not respect the court orders, and therefore we expect more drama.
As per the law in Kenya, a referendum cannot be determined by an organ that is not properly constituted, and the Building Bridges Initiative is one of them. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Zambian President Edgar Lungu is calling on citizens not to engage in violence in the run-up to the August 12th general election. His remarks follow recent reports of clashes between supporters of the governing Patriot Front Party and opponents of the government, including the United Party for National Development, UPND, and the National Democratic Congress, NDC. Emmanuel Malite is the media director for the opposition NDC. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that he welcomes the president's call, but he quickly adds that President Lungu should ensure that his message trickles down to his own supporters to stop attacking opponents of the administration.
It has been the cry of every Zambian who have been the elections violence-free from political violence. So in the recent past, we've had a situation where people have died, we have lost lives. Remember when we had the run by election, we lost our colleagues that were hacked. And I think that has been our cry, all the political parties, that we want to have a free and fair election. But anyway, things coming from him, from the opposition side of us, is that we've always wanted the president to put his foot down. So he's a commander in chief of armed forces. And when there is violence, you look to the commander to command. We have had the spoiler where he had declared no a state of emergency when we had the market burning down. But on the violence part, because we know that PF itself is a violent part, political part, in itself they fight. And, we have not been left out that other opposition political parties have been a target.
Does the alliance see this as a positive step from the president, particularly when opposition groups have often accused supporters of the Patriotic Front of engaging in election-related violence during the election process?
As alliance partner, we don't subscribe to political violence. We don't subscribe to even political violence. The violent party is a PF. The ruling party itself is the one that is mostly culprits in this political violence. So what we want to see, when he says something, it has to trickle down to his supporters. As the president, he has said that he doesn't want political violence.
The police have often accused the opposition of trying to foment trouble and trying to create tension, and by attacking them as well as PF supporters. And that is why sometimes they have to act. How do you respond to that?
Police itself in itself has been used by the Patriotic Front too much. They can't conduct themselves as professional, as in professional, because they can't act independently. Because we've had the situation where when they acted independently, we had the police officers being fired. So for them to come out and say, even the opposition and whatnot, that's just a rubber stamp, or it's something that they want to cover up. But in actual sense, what has been happening is police have not acted professionally, because the Home Affairs Minister, by then, before the dissolution of Parliament, is somebody who's so much a PF cadre, who's subscribed to political violence. So they can't act independently as a police, because they know that at the end of the day, they'll lose their jobs. And they know the economy in this country. The economy in this country is very, very, very bad.
Emmanuel Malite is the media director for Zambia's opposition National Democratic Congress Party. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Malawi's parliament this week rejected ombudsman Martha Chizuma to head the anti-corruption bureau, saying she failed the interview. But the ruling Malawi Congress Party, MCP, including President Lazarus Chakwera, accused opposition lawmakers of sabotaging the process. MCP lawmakers and political analysts say the opposition Democratic Progressive Party fears that Chizuma will come after them over alleged corruption when the DPP was in power. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Addressing Parliament Wednesday, President Chakwera said he was dismayed and disappointed by the committee's rejection of his nominee, Martha Chizuma, a day earlier.
Not only does this decision deny Malawians the services of a strong warrior, But it also delays our plan to empower the ACB to recruit additional prosecutors and implement the National Anti-Corruption Strategy 2 of 2019 to 2024.
The Public Appointments Committee of Parliament, or PAC, said Tuesday Chizuma was rejected because she failed to get the required scores needed for confirmation. Half of the lawmakers on the committee gave her low marks after an assessment interview and the aggregated results saw Chizuma scoring just 15 points out of possible 25, below the minimum pass rate of 17. Chakwera called on lawmakers to, in his words, put political and personal interests aside and do their part in accelerating the change Malawians have sought. Since he won presidency a year ago, Chakwera has conducted an anti-corruption campaign that has seen several key figures, including the security aide to former President Peter Mutharika, arrested. Chakwera says he believes the appointment of Chizuma, known as the Iron Lady, would advance that goal. Chizuma, who is currently Malawi's ombudsman, removed 5 top officials from posts at Malawi's communications regulator, saying they were illegally employed during the former Mutharika administration and then ruling Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP. Local media reports said one allegation is that opposition lawmakers pocketed money from corrupt business persons to vote against her. Opposition lawmaker Shadrack Namalomba of the DPP denied the accusation and said some pro-government lawmakers voted against the nominee as well.
We are not. It is actually that side that is against the appointment of Mutharika. Yeah. I would want Malawians to know that what we are doing today is being orchestrated by that side over there.
In the meantime, Parliament has passed a motion directing the Parliamentary Appointments Committee to submit a detailed report to the House by next Tuesday on why it turned down Chizuma. Legal experts say if the decision stands, the president will either resubmit Chizuma's name or announce a new nominee. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 14. A spokesperson says Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is not a coward who runs away from problems. Galba Shehu, senior special assistant to President Buhari on media and publicity, says President Buhari fought 4 years in the Nigerian civil war without even taking a vacation. He was reacting to a question about growing calls for President Buhari to resign for his alleged inability to deal with the insecurity in the country. In a speech on Thursday to mark the end of the month of Ramadan, President Buhari said Nigerian security agencies were working to regain the confidence of the people. Galba Shehu says there are problems in Nigeria, but that the president is standing up to the challenges like a strong man.
My sense is that it is better that we give the authorities, the military, police, intelligence community, the opportunity to carry out the directives of the president on this matter. The important thing is to look out for results, and we're hoping that Nigerians will not be disappointed in the president.
Why do you think Nigerians should believe the president now? After all, they have heard this promise before, especially since 2015.
I think that the challenges of 2021 are entirely different from the security challenges of 2015. When President Buhari came into office 2015, the big security challenge facing the country was the Boko Haram terrorism, which had engulfed the entire northeastern states. In fact, Boko Haram was present in Abuja, the federal capital, and headed for the south. They had been rolled back and pushed to the very fringes of Lake Chad as we speak now. And we're hoping that even from those fringe areas, they'll be flushed out.
The president appealed to what he called the elite to be more understanding. I was reading some information provided by the National Commandant of the Corps, Dixon Akor, that 1,179 school children were abducted in the recent past by bandits from various schools. Don't you think that Nigerians have had enough?
Nobody is happy with the school abductions. And it is sad that they have happened. And we hope there will be no more. But what should be taken note of is the fact of the agility with which our security and military authorities respond to those incidents that have happened in the past. And yes, if up to or more than 1,000 were taken, it is also true under this administration, nearly all of those who had been taken have been brought home more or less without fatalities.
What does the president think about the demand by some Nigerians that he should resign because they feel he has not been able to end the insecurity in the country?
President Muhammadu Buhari is a retired military general who had fought in the civil war. For the 4 years he was at the war front, he never ran home or took any vacation. So he's not a coward. There are problems in the country, but strong men would stay in there and see that solutions are found. And this is what the president is doing. Opposition politicians in a hurry to take power should wait, await the next elections. We are a democracy characterized by periodic elections every 4 years. So 2 years from now, let them go around for the office. President Buhari will not be a candidate in that election.
Thank you so much, Shehu.
Thank you for inviting us.
Galba Shehu is the senior special assistant to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari on media and publicity. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. Sierra Leone is on the verge of abolishing the death penalty. Deputy Justice Minister Umaru Napoleon says President Julius Maada Bio's administration will soon submit a bill to Parliament to do just that. He says President Bio, along with the urging of anti-death penalty advocates, is fulfilling a campaign promise to preserve life, not to take it away.
The issue of the abolition of the death penalty is one of the very old issues we have in this country. Advocates for the abolition of the death penalty have been calling the government to abolish the death penalty. The president, His Excellency, the Retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio, during his campaign to become president of the Republic of Australia, he made certain commitments. And quite recently, some group of people, human rights organizations, met him and reaffirmed that commitment, saying that definitely we'll be able to deal with that issue. So basically, it came out as a result of those commitments. Also, you may recall that since 1998, we placed a moratorium on the issue of execution. Nobody has been executed, even though people are still being sentenced to death. So we thought it fit that it was hard time. We decided finally to take it out of our law books and abolish it.
I was wondering whether did Sierra Leone come under some pressure, say, from the United Nations or any Western country to abolish the death penalty?
As a country, we've not come under any pressure. Like I said, this issue has been around for a very long time. So it is not any pressure. It's just been that advocates for the abolition of death penalty in country have been doing their work for a very long time. And that was reinforced by the commitment made by His Excellency, Retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio, to ensure that we abolish the death penalty.
So when do you think President Bio might want to submit this legislation to do away with the death penalty?
As I speak to you now, they've taken a very serious step towards that 2 days ago when Cabinet finally approved the proposal sent into Cabinet by the Attorney General, Minister of Justice, for Cabinet to give the approval for us to amend the provisions of our respective laws where we have the death penalty, like the Offences Against the Persons Act, a very old British legislation in 1861, the Larceny Act of 1916, the State Treasons Act. Those are the legislations that we have the death penalty mentioned in them as a punishment, that if you are guilty of this offence, your punishment should be death by hanging. So what basically we're trying to do, and what we sought to do as a ministry, we decided to ask Cabinet for the approval for us to amend these provisions from our law books. So these provisions will be amended ASAP and they will be submitted to Parliament. I am very much sure we'll have the cooperation of the parliamentarian, we'll have a bipartisan cooperation for us to have this legislation pass into law as soon as possible.
Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
You're most welcome, sir. Thank you.
Umaru Napoleon is Sierra Leone's Deputy Justice Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. Eid al-Fitr is the special time of the year for nearly half of Africa's population who are adherents of Islam. But this year, and the last one, it's different. The pandemic has not only limited the ability of families to gather, but increased the needs of families across the continent. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Eid is a special holiday on the Muslim calendar, a sacred celebration of family and food after a month of fasting and prayer. Last year's festival was overshadowed by lockdowns and pandemic restrictions worldwide. Some of the same constraints remain in place this year, says Sheikh Mohammed Isak, an imam at Nairobi's prominent Jamia Mosque. But the faithful have adapted.
This is a great challenge. But despite that, we thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that this year we are able to pray together the last 10 days of Ramadan. And also today, Eid al-Fitr, we have celebrated or prayed together as a community. And this is something that we should not take it for granted. We have to thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this year is much better compared to last year. And we hope that the following years will be much better than this year.
Congregant Swaleh Mohammed agrees.
For now, it's very difficult. I can just say maybe to the world, to my fellow Muslim brothers and sisters, wherever they are, as we take care, as we celebrate this holiday, let's put in consideration the government regulations, the world regulations, whatever, so that we can keep safe.
In multi-ethnic South Africa, Yusuf Mohammed, head of the South Africa branch of global charity Islamic Relief, says this year's Festival of Light will be lit, in contrast to the harsh lockdown that dimmed last year's celebrations. Anita Pell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Rwanda, where the inaugural season of the Basketball African League gets underway this weekend in Kigali, starting from May 16th. 12 clubs representing 12 countries will be going head-to-head in a quest to determine the African champion. Kigali Arena, with a 10,000-seat capacity, will host all 26 games of the tournament. In a late announcement, the Rwanda Ministry of Sport has given a green light to basketball fans to attend matches. The Minister of Sport, Aurore Mimosa Muyangaju, emphasized that although spectators will be allowed at Kigali Arena, COVID-19 preventive measures shall not be compromised. Liz Mills, head coach of Kenya men's national basketball team, speaks on the likely winners of the inaugural edition of the Basketball African League.
The favorites to win this, and if they don't make the finals, I would be shocked. This will be USM from Tunisia. This is basically the Tunisian national team with some imports. And we all are very aware of how strong their national team is. They're led by who I think is the best point guard in Africa, Omar Abada, and he's surrounded by elite veterans in Makram Ben Romdan and Murad El Mabrouk.
Staying with basketball news, Cameroon will host the 2021 Women's Afro Basket. The tournament will be played from the 17th to the 26th September in Yaoundé. It will be the second time in 6 years after the 2015 edition that Cameroon will be hosting the competition. In football news, newly appointed Bafana Bafana coach Hugo Bruce says qualifying for the 2023 African Cup of Nations and the 2026 FIFA World Cup is not negotiable. Although his mandate is to qualify for the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar, Hugo Bruce says it will be a challenge considering that Bafana Bafana's track record in qualification for the world's biggest football spectacle has not been too good.
Don't be angry if you are not qualified for the World Cup. It will be tough. But in 23, there is AFCON. If you are not qualified for that, you can kill me. This is something I want. We will again doing everything to be qualified for World Cup.
In athletics, Kenya is hosting the 2021 World Athletics Under 20 Championships, also known as the World Junior Championships. Local organizing committee chairman, retired Lieutenant General Jackson Tuwei, has assured the rest of the world that the country is on course to stage the prestigious athletics event in August.
We would like to look at arrival, how we meet the visitors from there, what actions are supposed to be taken there. The medical team and all of us are working on that. How do you transport them from there, meeting all the protocols? How do you get them to the testing center?
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, May 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.